Bye.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before. Never been done in this country. In this country.
DVD Hard Knock Radio, it is May Day, and there's a call all around the country for people to strike, withhold their labor, especially at companies like Amazon, Target, Instacart, Whole Foods, places where workers have said they are being mistreated and even exploited. Many have said that they are on the front line of a pandemic, a historic pandemic, and they're not being properly cared for. There's also a call for people to withhold their rent at the time when many have been furloughed, many have been fired from their jobs or laid off, and they're not able to pay rent as we go into the 8th week of this pandemic. Joining us on the line, somebody who is calling for a massive strike, a general strike, is Colleen Cuno from Cooperation Jackson. So Colleen, welcome to the show. And what has been going on in Mississippi, which is one of those places that people say is the belly of the beast, so to speak?
Well, it's definitely the belly of the beast. I think that's more than just proverbial. But we just finished our caravan going through many of the critical work sites in and around the downtown area in the business corridor, making our presence known. There was a clash of two worldviews, if you would. There was also some right-wing demonstrators over at the Capitol who were protesting. One, an order to eliminate the open carry law, that our mayor tried to issue or did issue on Monday, which then got rescinded through some kind of massive protest, both from city council and a lot of different sources. But they used that as an excuse to hold a rally to try to force the state to open. And folks should know that the state is kind of gradually opening despite warnings from doctors, from scientists, but they're following the logic the governor and his right-wing allies are following the logic that the economy is more important than human life, and that they are more than willing and prepared to sacrifice thousands of people per day. That's what we're averaging in this country now. And there's 31 states now, probably more, but it was 31 states this morning that were looking to open up. And we got to remember that Trump's stay-at-home order, the federal stay-at-home order, ended yesterday, which is one of the reasons why we were calling for these mass actions today to protect people's lives, protect our communities, and to keep this pandemic from spreading. So our little part here in Mississippi, it's the beginning. We're going to be back at it on the 1st of June to send a clear message, because we know this pandemic, unfortunately, is not going to stop by that time, and the economic hardship has been generated by this, but we should say, to be honest, by the government's and capital's total disregard for people and putting profits over people. That is the real calamity, because everybody should best believe the United States government has the resources, institute, even if it was just in an immediate form, universal basic income to everybody plus some. And if you believe I'm telling the story, I want you to look at the trillions of dollars that the federal government has just issued to corporations and to the Treasury to uphold and uplift and maintain profits on Wall Street. You know, what they have given to Wall Street in the past month makes the bailout one and two. And if there is going to be a third one, it will compare in comparison to the resources that have already been doled out and all the money they have printed to try to prop up and uphold this system. So the resources are there. The political will is not. And that's where we come in, and I think our actions come in. And this call towards building, towards a general strike in this country is going to be so critical and pivotal in the near future.
Let me ask you this, Khali. You said there was a clash of two worldviews, and you pointed out that there were far right wingers on the state capitol making demands. One of the demands mm-hmm. is, of course, to open up the economy and allow workers to go back to doing what they're doing. Among those demands, are they asking that the workplace conditions be improved, that salaries be raised? Are they making those type of life-altering demands, or are they just saying, open up the economy and let people go back to work?
Just open up the economy and let people go back to work. If you've seen any of these right-wing forces or these open-up states call for better wages, higher wages, better working conditions, the insurance of proper protective equipment, let me know and let us know. I haven't seen one. You know, the basic thing is, let us just go back to work. And if you listen to them very carefully, I mean, there's various degrees of honesty that folks have, but some of the most honest statements, which represent the general line and the talking points, and people best believe that this is a organized campaign that is going on the right. And these demonstrations that you're seeing at all these Capitol buildings, like the one that happened yesterday, the one that's happening here, there is a concerted set of financial forces that are pushing them and backing them, and political forces. So don't take this to be a spontaneous thing. And they have talking points. And one of the talking points is that people's the economy is far more important than losing a couple of people a day. You know, and if you, some of the politicians from Florida, from Mississippi, from Tennessee and elsewhere have made that explicitly clear. And I even heard a conversation this morning, Davey. Well, it was dressed up in some more liberal garb, but CNN was touting some of this line, saying, well, we just have to accept that most people might die. And they try to pose it as a question. But the very fact that you raised that as a subject of public debate on mainstream TV and not just point out how it's a total violation of human rights and a disregard for human life and just totally reject it, means that you are lending credence to it yourself, and you know that they represent a corporate voice, and the corporate entities want to get back to making profits. So, no, that I haven't heard that. I definitely haven't heard that from any of those in Mississippi. And we need to be I mean, for the, you know, frankly, we need to be clear that one of the reasons why many of these forces are willing to take this kind of sacrificial attitude is because of who overwhelmingly is dying as a result of COVID-19. And it's Black and brown workers, people who've been deemed to be essential, folks who work on the front lines of healthcare, folks who work on the front line of food production, food distribution, and mailing and shipping. Those are the folks who are in public transportation of various kinds. Those are the folks who are dying. Those are Black and brown workers, the vast majority of which are either seriously underpaid because of how their contracts are structured in these little gig jobs with people who spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to acquire skill, are being paid paltry wages for already existing exploited practices, or you have even greater number of folks who are making at or below minimum wage, working at retail counters or in some of these processing shipyards like Amazon, or as retail clerks behind a grocery store, or you know, stuffing groceries and putting them on the shelves, or truck drivers. So the racial dynamic of this cannot be overstated, that it's because it's us that's dying in such high numbers that you have this disregard for these right-wing forces for this pandemic. Because they, I think there's still this notion that, you know, even if they get sick, many of them, given their economic background, that they'll be protected. And definitely if they show up to hospitals, not many of them are getting rejected like many of our folks are. So they have a different perspective and a different set of interests, completely not aligned with ours, in regards to how this particular crisis gets resolved.
I think, Kali, as we close, we should definitely see it as biological warfare. Now, maybe they didn't invent. Mm-hmm. We can debate that if this virus was invented in a lab, but I think that's immaterial at this point. Well, we do know that the war is waged on who gets to go to the hospital.
That's right.
Who gets
treated, that's
right. Who doesn't get charged? Who is seen as important enough to be saved? Who will get a vaccine? Who will not get a vaccine? Those type of disparities are coming up, and they need to be monitored. They need to be watched. And we also need to see who's subjected to disinformation, as we're seeing a whole lot of folks who you would otherwise think would have some sort of either empathy or some common sense are touting lines that are very similar to the right-wing lines that that are being touted on these state capitals in Jackson, Mississippi,
right,
where you're
right
at, or in other places. It is definitely designed to clear the swamp. And the swamp that they see that needs to be cleared is the masses of Black people who they feel at this point in time are disposable. And we need to protect ourselves at all costs. So, Kali, thank you very much for reporting in from Jackson, Mississippi. We will check in with you as the weeks come, and especially as the momentum picks up for a massive strike. And of course, these strikes will continue on the first
right
of each
That's
month.
Right.
So thank you very much, Kali.
All right, thank you. Looking forward to more, Dave.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio. Hanging out with you this afternoon. We have caught up with folks that are in the caravan. We were over at Whole Foods waiting for them, but they, you know, the caravan has been taking its time. And so they're down here at City Hall. We're catching up with somebody who is in the caravan, George Galvis from Courage. Tell everybody who's listening what's been going on this May Day, what important information needs to be conveyed that may not be picked up by the mainstream.
Absolutely. So first of all, just want to give a shout out to our relatives in Jackson, Mississippi, Brother Kali Okuno, who used to be right here in Oakland organizing in our communities. And the work of Cooperation Jackson, who called out our movement family from across the nation to basically declare that we need to create a national strike day on May 1st, which has always been International Workers' Day, and every first of the month. you know, because what we've seen, and this is something that's very familiar to us, is disaster capitalism. And we know that those who are already most vulnerable in our communities are the ones who are going to feel the majority of the pain from this pandemic, and already are. And so this is about solidarity with everybody, and this is why I feel so inspired, why today was such a beautiful convening, man, such a beautiful gathering, as Caravan for Justice's car rally. You know, we know who the essential workers are, man. You know what I mean? We see our ILWU, our longshoremen and women out there on the docks making sure that freight and essential things like food and medicine and, you know, healthcare materials are getting sent to where they need to go to. And they're out there putting their lives on the line. We've seen our teachers here in Oakland all of a sudden pivot and turn schools into food distribution centers and food banks where they're out there making sure that people are fed at this time. You know what I'm saying? Organizations like mine, I got my staff are out there. We're not a food bank, but we're out there dropping off groceries. We're out there, you know what I mean? So everybody's leaning in. But the interesting thing is that the folks are leaning in are the people who got the least amount of resources. You know what I mean? It's actually the folks who are most vulnerable. So solidarity, man, solidarity with workers' rights, immigrant rights, formerly incarcerated people, renters, you know what I'm saying? Immigrants, everybody, man, you know, trans women, everybody.
What was it like today down by the docks? What was it like over here at City Hall? You said the police, very interestingly, were following you and making sure that you all couldn't do what you're doing. I want to contrast with the fact that right-wing protesters showed up in San Francisco and not hindered by the police. They showed up in Jackson, Mississippi, were not hindered by the police. So I think the lines are very clear that if you show up with a rifle and you're talking about let us go back to work and free America and you're backed by these multi-million corporations, there will be no hindrance. But you guys are a ragtag bunch, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but you're a scrappy, pulling everything together, the least vulnerable. And when I passed City Hall, there was police all around. When I was over at Whole Foods, they were there. So that's what I'm observing today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And those are the kind of double standards that we're basically fighting up and saying, this is a fight for our lives. I mean, this is a fight for our lives. This is we're defending land, we're defending life. And that's why I feel so inspired by seeing folks come together, because unfortunately, even in social justice movement building, we can sometimes operate in silos. But seeing everybody come together to really acknowledge the intersectionality, in my native traditions, we say all my relations. In the Lakota language, they say Metaki Asin. In the Mayan language, they say In Lakesh. You are a reflection of me and I'm a reflection of you. We are interconnected. We are interdependent. And that's what, if there's a silver lining to this crazy pandemic and this crazy time, it's that it's starting to actually, it froze up capitalism. You know what I mean? And let's be real. Capitalism does not equal democracy. If anything, it undermines democracy. And capitalism is an extension of colonialism and the theft of this land. This is still stolen, occupied land. You know what I'm saying? And we know that the very first prisons on this land were the slave plantation, you know what I'm saying, and the reservation. We know the very first police on this land were the slave catcher and the cavalry. And we see extensions of that happening today. And what we've seen is we've seen the billionaire and the multinational corporations perpetuate their wealth by nearly 50% in just the last 4 to 6 weeks, while workers and people are struggling and figuring how they're going to survive. And we've seen multiple deaths already. The disproportionality we've seen just right here in Oakland, you can see through GIS mapping that the concentration of people who've been tested positive for COVID and who are dying from COVID are in East Oakland. But what is East Oakland is black and brown. So, you know what I mean? It doesn't take rocket science, you know what I'm saying? But what we're saying is down with this rotten system. We're organizing, organizing, and organizing. And this is a fight for our lives.
Last question. We've heard a lot about how this has disproportionately impacted black folks, and it absolutely has. And what has been missing is the conversation about indigenous folks and brown folks in places where brown folks tend to be the majority, how it's disproportionately impacted them. I think that's by design, not by, it's not organic. You don't want to show too much unity in terms of how many people are being impacted. But let's talk about the fact that you have, at least in California, the death toll has been with Mexican brown folks and what have you. How do we kind of make sense of that, and what do we need to do or know about that?
Well, I want to really just punctuate the concept of solidarity and, once again, interconnectedness and interdependence, because I think sometimes when we have these conversations, people fall into the trap of the oppression Olympics. You know what I mean? That's classic divide and conquer. And so, yes, Black folks are being disproportionately impacted. Yes, brown folks, immigrants, First Nations people are being disproportionately impacted. Poor people are being disproportionately impacted. So everybody who is already vulnerable is being disproportionately impacted. One of the things that we're seeing, though, is this. A lot of immigrants, because of the increased ICE and anti-immigrant and xenophobic policies of this administration, are not accessing health care. So they're not being documented as having been COVID positive, but there's deaths that are happening and they're not necessarily being documented in that way. They're also, what we continue to see sometimes, you know, is this whole kind of racial ambiguity, because what the hell is a Latino? You know what I'm saying? It's an ethnic identity, it's not a race. And majority of the Spanish-speaking world are people of African descent and people of indigenous descent. You know what I'm saying? So oftentimes, because of legacies of colonialism and identity politics, sometimes you're going to see opportunistically a lot of systems refer to so-called immigrants, particularly Spanish-speaking folks, as white, even though the outside world, they're not going to benefit from white privilege, is going to see them as actually black or brown, you know what I'm saying, an immigrant. And so the other thing that we're seeing with First Nations is that they're being categorized as others. What is an other? What the hell is an other? You know what I mean? That's just disrespectful. And what we're also saying is that we need to actually have racial and ethnic data collected. In jails and prisons right now, they are conveniently not releasing any racial ethnic data around who's being impacted, because they know what they know what it's going to end up reflecting, and it's bad PR for them. But we need to, that's what has to be one of the demands. We have to collect racial and ethnic data. And just like they're trying to suppress the census, they're trying to suppress who's being most impacted.
Real talk. We've been talking with George Galvis. We're going to let him go. We've been trying to do the social distancing while doing this interview, you know, step in and step back. We appreciate this. I guess everybody's headed over to Whole Foods, so we will try and join them. In the meantime, we're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hey, yo, what's up, people? This is Mixmaster Mike, Serial Wax Killer. You're tuned in to Hard Knock Radio.
This is Ruben Hurricane Carter. You're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Check this out. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, and you are listening to Hard Knock Radio.
This is Danny Glover, and I want you to listen to what I listen to, Hard Knock Radio.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you. Want to check in with somebody else who has been on the front lines. We're talking about Suleiman Hyatt. He talked to us the last couple of weeks about rent strikes and, you know, supporting and standing in solidarity with essential workers. Suleiman, how's it been going today, this May Day? Where have you been and what have you seen?
Oh, man, Davey, it's been an exciting day of events on this wonderful, bright, sunny May Day. I'm in San Francisco right now. We're just finishing up the protest. We ended with an occupation of a house, mirroring or following in the lead of the Moms for Housing in Oakland. So there's a housing occupation right now happening in San Francisco. We ended with that. We were earlier actually confronted by some of, you know, these like ultra-nationalist folks who came out to protest also, but we were able to overcome that easily.
They came and confronted you about what?
So they organized a protest simultaneously. I don't know whether it was coincidence or not, but they had a protest at the same location at the same time as our protest, and they were there to as you've been noticing, for example, nationally, folks have been going to city halls demanding that the states be reopened, and so these were the same folks coming out, waving American flags and pushing the president's narrative and things like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting, because we saw that happened down in Jackson, Mississippi, so it was surprising to see that would happen in San Francisco. So there were more people than them, or what happened?
We outnumbered them, you know, probably 10 to 1. It was hardly even noticeable, I want to say. What we did was we had a car protest set up. We had how many folks were there? It was probably like, you know, a good like 75, you know, 80, you know, cars out here. We all came down to, we all descended around City Hall. Had the banners out, had the people do all the social distancing and everything. So it was good on that end. And then we all went to what was actually a secret that just became revealed, which was the house that was actually being occupied. by the homeless coalitions out here in San Francisco. So that was a real good way to end this. And so we'll most definitely stay, you know, updated and abreast about what happens in that occupation.
Well, that's good. So you all were able to bring that. Did you notice people honoring the strikes? We're here at the Whole Foods on, you know, in Oakland. We just seen cars that are now coming from the caravan. There are police that are standing on the roofs, believe it or not. So, you know, I don't know if police were standing on the roofs in City Hall to stop those right-wing protesters, but they're here at the Whole Foods here in Oakland. But with that being said, you know, what was the did you see people honoring the picket lines?
What I can report on that was, so I was in charge of the sound system on the truck, and as we had our sound going, you know, blaring, you know, Cancel the Rent and Rent Strike, we got a lot of love from folks in the street, and in particular, you know, like construction workers, different, like, you know, labor folks that were just on the street. So that was really good to see. That was really good. You know, that was well received from us right there. The message was really resonating with folks in San Francisco, especially when we got to the Mission. It was really resonating with folks. That was really well received in that.
Well, that's good to hear. And, you know, we want to find out how the rent strikes are going to be going. I guess we'll find out next week as people are able to report what's been the result of those who had no money and absolutely couldn't pay. So they wind up being de facto in the rent strike, and those who made the decision to stand in solidarity and what that looks like. But that seemed to be national news, and it's a reality that many people are now having to face. They have no choice.
Absolutely. I mean, no, you know, having no choice is what's happening right now. That is the level that we're at this particular moment, where you're having like a third of folks in April who couldn't pay. And you can only imagine it's probably going to be, you know, either half of all renters or two thirds of all renters who probably can't pay, you know, today. And I imagine it's even going to be further exacerbated, you know, come June, especially since the California stay-at-home order has extended out towards the end of May. I think, you know, most definitely pulling on the coattails of it being national news. Yeah, it is most definitely national news. Rent strike is a real thing. Canceling the rent is a real thing. I'm really hoping that the governor is seeing this, because it's the governor that has the ability to stop this. I'm really hoping that the governor can see this, and the governor can actually address issues around the stuff that's been happening with ICE, the stuff that's been happening with the virus spreading in jail. You know, hopefully around abolishment of all jails, just want to, you know, plug that. And then hopefully, most importantly too, around canceling rent and canceling mortgages. So we're really hoping that the actions today were felt, you know, by those in Sacramento, for them to make the right decision.
Suleiman Hyatt, we appreciate you taking time out, reporting in from San Francisco. We are still here waiting for the caravan that is set to arrive here at the Whole Foods. As I said, there were police sitting on the roofs up here in the parking lot. We'll see where that goes. We did hear some cars come by and honk, and I'm sitting next to a car that actually has the words May Day on it, so they're getting out, and maybe folks are heading over. In the meantime, thank you. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
We're the Last Poets, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio, Monday through Friday at 4 o'clock.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I wanted to follow up with a conversation we had maybe about a week or so ago. We talked with some of the folks from Youth Versus Apocalypse as they were celebrating Earth Day. And during that riveting conversation, they made note that they were connecting the activities that they were doing around climate change and environmental justice with the type of efforts that are underway right now on May Day. Since then, they had made some more noise. And this is something that is very concerning, and I think it's very much related to May Day, in the sense that you have employers, you have people in power who are at every opportunity trying to run game and exploit average working people. In this case, these young people who we have on the air with us this afternoon had to push back and ring the alarm at the attempts from folks in power, and I'll let them give the story, to try and pass off as an energy alternative nuclear power and calling it clean energy or some sort of euphemism. So we have them here this May Day to talk about what they're doing and how they connect those dots in. Let me start off with you, Nadja. How you doing?
Fine. Thanks so much for having me. I'm very good.
Talk to our listeners about what you all have been doing and what happened over the past couple of weeks with this thing about nuclear power. Give our listeners the 411.
So we're part of a group called Youth vs. Apocalypse, which is a climate justice group here in the Bay Area. And one thing that I think is really special about Youth vs. Apocalypse is that we see climate change as not only an environmental issue, but also an issue that connects to all different types of injustices. And we see the way that environmental issues, such as the use of nuclear power and other really polluting forms of extraction are damaging communities. And we know that's an issue that affects people, not only the environment. And so we're fighting for our communities. And that's something that we hold really close in Youth vs. Apocalypse. I think some of the other people on this call were more involved in pushing for the vote against nuclear power in the Bay Area. So we're more involved in pushing for the vote against nuclear power in the Bay Area. So I'll pass it on to one of them.
We appreciate that. Who were some of the people that were more directly involved with the push around nuclear power? Who can we come to? We have Dulce, we have Elizabeth, we have Samari. Jemri, who was involved that can further elaborate where Nadja left off?
I was involved, so was Elizabeth and Jemri.
Go ahead. Well, you start, Dulce. Go ahead.
Okay. So basically how we like found out about this nuclear energy power plant that this company called, I think, EBCE wanted to put in our communities, it was actually through another climate justice organizing group that we collaborate with. And they told us about this meeting happening two days before the meeting actually happened. And it was actually on Earth Day, April 22nd, where a group of board members from our communities, they were gonna vote on a nuclear power plant in our communities because to them this was cheaper and cleaner, and they said that this was a brighter choice. So it like really pressed us, the youth, because we live in these communities and we are communities of low income people, communities of color, and the fact that they want to like push this nuclear power plant that has like nuclear waste with radiation that could potentially cause cancer and then affects the land for like hundreds of years. And they wanted to push this on our communities because they know that we want to choose a cheaper option because we don't have like the means to pay for a higher, better eco-friendly energy for our homes. And it was really messed up. So, cause they're just like pushing this on our communities. So we showed up to their meeting. It was through Zoom. And a lot of the public didn't know that this was happening because everything is like amidst the pandemic. So we showed up to this meeting and we weren't able to talk until like, I think the third hour of this meeting. And it was for the public comment, and our youth expressed their feelings around the nuclear power plant that they wanted to put in our communities and how it's gonna affect us. And I think it was about like 60 something people that showed up to the public comment, but due to time, it was like cut short. But a few of us were able to still talk and give our public testimony.
And what was the reaction at the end of the night?
To be honest, since it was really late at night and I needed my sleep, as soon as I like spoke, I waited a few, like 20 minutes and people were still going on and giving their public comment, and then I went to sleep. But then I think the next morning we found out that we actually won. It was 10 votes against 5. To not have a nuclear power plant for this year, 2020. It was really cool.
Well, congratulations on that. Let me bring in Elizabeth. What would you want to add to what Nadja and Dulce were saying with respect to that? And how do you maybe connect this to the activities that are going on this May Day?
Yeah, so going on, off of what Dulce was saying, we were actually on the call, that meeting, for a very long time before we got to speak, and it was getting really frustrating for us, not because we had to wait, but it was more frustrating listening to adults speak and just try to make it sound like if nuclear power was actually a good thing and something that would benefit the community. So when we actually gave our public comment, they were personal testimonies, and it was just really it was really empowering to see how our voices could actually change and shape someone's opinion about nuclear energy. So it kind of goes on to show how important our voices are and how we can actually use them to actually make a difference, because this was only one of the many more victories to come. And when we're connecting this specific action, this action was on Earth Day, and Earth Day is also 1 week. Youth versus Apocalypse kicked off our virtual strike, which was surrounded by the hashtag No One Is Disposable. So when we think of Earth, when we think of our theme for No One Is Disposable and Earth Day, it really relates back to May Day, because we're talking about the rights of workers and people who, you know, are overworked, especially during this pandemic, and they're kind of treated, you know, as if they were disposable, but they're not. They're people, and their work should be valued.
Yeah, now that's real talk, and we appreciate that. Jim Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
We're talking about May Day, and we're connecting those dots, and we know about the theme that you all at Youth versus Apocalypse have had in terms of making sure that nobody's disposable, which is a very valiant theme. The argument that's often made is that, well, these people need jobs. And, you know, if you oppose these power plants, you're going to be taking jobs away from the community. And if you guys keep insisting that we have green air, it's going to be more expensive, and it's going to make us cut jobs. How do you respond to companies that would use that line? And I'm not even sure if they brought that up at the meeting, but, you know, that wouldn't be the first time if they did, in terms of trying to make it seem like the fights that you all are undertaking in terms of environmental justice and climate change is really going to be a costly type of endeavor, and it's going to cost people to lose their jobs. And here we are celebrating the workers. So how do you avoid being pigeonholed as a group that's against average working people?
Yeah, I think that argument is made a lot, and I think it's like a very flawed argument, because it's not like the only two options are either fossil fuels or like nuclear energy. We have like solar power, wind power, like actual sustainable renewable forms of energy that would be cheap in the long run because they literally pay themselves off, you know? And if we switch to those types of renewable energies and other green jobs, like that would also be bringing jobs to communities. And it would be jobs that aren't literally like killing them, you know?
Let me ask you this. Let's come back to what we're doing here on May Day, and we're seeing all these strikes that are taking place. And I know that you were making that connection in terms of nobody's disposable. Can we dig a little bit deeper into that, that notion of nobody being disposable? I think it was either you, Elizabeth, who mentioned the fact that we're looking at a time during this pandemic where a lot of people are being treated as disposable individuals. The Amazon workers who were demanding protective equipment, who are being fired, or those who've been sent home with no sick pay. How do we, you know, combine these different movements together and really, you know, if you were able to put forth the magic wand, really create an environment that's going to be beneficial for everybody? What does that look like for you all, and what steps do you think need to be taken? And any one of you all can jump in. I think I called out Elizabeth on this one, so maybe you can jump in and anybody else can join.
When talking about no one is disposable, I feel like, especially when it comes to the workers, it's kind of seen like, oh, well, if you don't want to do this job, like, you're easily replaceable. So it kind of, that's what I think about when I think about no one is disposable, because people are treated like if you're not going to do what I'm making you do, even though it's unjust and even though it's so flawed what I'm making you do, like, I don't care. There's so many more people who need a job right now, and so many more people who could be working or who would rather do this work even if I'm treating you unfairly and I'm not treating you the way I should be treating you. So I feel like especially when we're talking about this pandemic, there's so much going on, and it's like big corporations like Amazon and, you know, Whole Foods, they're still making their workers work long hours, even though they're at a higher risk because they're out in public and they're interacting with so many people and they're touching so many things. Does anyone want to add on?
Yeah, I can
go ahead. This is Nadja speaking. That was Elizabeth. Go ahead, Nadja.
I think the slogan "No one is disposable" really encapsulates all our work around climate justice and the way that it connects to all different forms of justice, especially in the labor movement, and especially with everything that's happening with COVID-19, because so often low-income people of color are considered disposable and workers are considered disposable, and what we're trying to advocate for is that no one is, and that these are people who we need to care for as we care for everyone on this planet, and especially right now where some people in this country are advocating to reopen the states and to go back to work, and that is at the expense of so many millions of deaths. And that's another place where no one is disposable comes in. Because we can't sacrifice the lives of so many people, and we can't sacrifice the health of so many people. And so this is just really about caring for everyone, especially when we see these issues such as the pandemic and the climate crisis that affect everyone on this planet. It's making sure that no one is considered disposable and no one is left behind, and that we were really sure, and we create a society and a world where everyone is especially valued and taken care of. Yeah,
that's the voice of Nadja Goldberg. And Lucy, I think Lucy, you were about to say something.
Yeah, to add on to what Nadja was saying, I think a big part of the solution could be a just transition with the Green New Deal, making sure that all workers get livable wages so that they could live and actually afford rent. Because here in the Bay Area, rent is pretty expensive, and a lot of people are in the streets right now and can't afford to pay a home, and everything's just getting super gentrified. And also during the pandemic, a lot of these workers don't have healthcare. And they are the essential workers. People need them, and they don't have the resources they need.
And this just shows that they are being treated as disposable, because the government and those in powers, they don't care if they get sick, because I don't know, they just think they're disposable. And to relate the song, I guess where it came from, well, my perspective on like writing the song, it takes me back to when I was in school and I was learning about the food industry and the food agriculture, and coming from an undocumented community, it really like got me really hard when I found out that a lot of these food industries were hiring people from Central America and Mexico to come work for them. And as soon as the workers told them that they wanted better conditions, they were threatening them to get them deported, or got them deported because they treated them just like the animals that they I guess not really cultivated, but the animals that they bred so that we could eat them, like if they were like disposable.
Right. You know, and I appreciate that. You know, we're going to play the song. Tell us a little bit about it, just if for people who don't know.
Yeah, so this song was created from youth in Youth Versus Apocalypse, and we featured Coco Pela and Raya Nicole, both hip-hop artists in the Bay Area, and both are women, really powerful women and activists. And we wrote this song with the idea of no one is disposable, no one is going to be left behind in the climate movement or any other social movement. Because a lot of the times people want to solve the climate crisis with the same systems of oppression that created it in the first place. So in this song, we highlight kind of like the oppression that Black people, Indigenous people, and people of color have in this country for centuries. And also it shows resilient, how we won't be silent anymore, and how like people are afraid of us when we unite because they know how we are powerful. And yeah, there's a little bit of poetry, spoken word, hip-hop, and yeah, it was really exciting to hear it. We recorded ourselves from home through our little iPhone, and then we had somebody like put it together. It was such a good experience during the pandemic, because like during these times it's like easy to lose hope, but coming together and creating something cool that other people will enjoy and empower other people is pretty great, and it gives us like hope all over again.
We're gonna play that, and we appreciate that. There's also a video to go along with it. What's the name of the song, Nobody's Disposable?
Yeah, it's called No One Is Disposable.
Okay, as we close out, let me just ask you all this, you know, and also give you an opportunity to give some final remarks or marching orders for our listeners. One of the things that I got from your organization, Youth Versus Apocalypse, is that you have substantially changed the definition of what it means when we talk about the environment. The environment for many people for a very long time has often meant, you know, saving the trees and saving the whales, which are very important, you know, especially as we deplete resources. But I've been always impressed that you all have included the environment, meaning our neighborhoods and meaning work conditions, you know, what the conditions are in the workplace. So the environment is all encompassing, and I think that's important. And if anybody wants to add to that, or take that a little bit further, feel free to do so. We'll start off with you, Elizabeth, and get to your last words and last comments.
Yeah, so something that I think is so important, and something that Youth Versus Apocalypse does such a well job emphasizing, is that we're not only talking about climate change, we're talking about climate justice. And this means that this intersects with so many other social justice issues and so many systems of oppression. And a lot of it is people in power and people who prioritize profit over people and what people need. And that's something that we also talk about a lot in the song, because we're not talking about like, oh, like, yeah, use a reusable water bottle, but we don't say that in the song. In the song, we're talking about these systems of oppression that are put in place. And I think the song is just, I just want to add on to what Lucy was saying about the song, because it holds a really special place in my heart, because one, it's a bop and it's so fun to listen to and it's so catchy, but also I feel like it makes sure that we don't lose hope, because so many people have listened to it, and I feel like it's not only a song that we, you know, because we did make the song for Earth Day, but it's not just about Earth Day, because it's about so many other things and emphasizing that no one is disposable. And we also came out with a music video last week, and the music video was a compilation of different clips of people holding signs that say, "No one is disposable, I stand with, I need, I'm fighting for." So that's kind of, yeah, just what I want to add on.
We appreciate that. Jemri, any last comments from you?
Yeah, I guess one thing I wanted to say is that in YVA, I think what we try to express a lot is that, like, in our society, like, capitalism, colonialism, and white supremacy, like, that's at the foundation of our current society, and that's what's creating all of these, like, different systems of injustice. And so when crises like climate change or the coronavirus pandemic happen, all of those existing systems are intensified. And so to solve any of these problems, if you're not addressing it in an intersectional way, and if you're not willing to talk about the actual, like, root of the problems at the foundation, then we're never going to make any meaningful change, and we're never going to make the change that's necessary. And so I feel like that's what I really like about Youth Versus Apocalypse. And I think this song and the music video really gets that intersectional perspective across, because all of these issues are connected. And so I guess I would suggest everyone to not only, like, stream the song and watch the music video, but we also have the No ID TikTok challenge. And we're going to be doing some actions today online. And so that will be on our Instagram, Youth Versus Apocalypse, and then all of our social media is also Youth Versus Apocalypse. So it'd be great if people would want to take part in that.
We appreciate that. And I think we got everybody on their last comment. So Delcy, Elizabeth, Jemre, and Nadja, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll look out for the video. And have a happy May Day, and thank you for making those connections and the fight that you did to turn around the potential hazards that were going to be laid on our community in the form of nuclear power, which they were calling clean energy. So y'all have a good one, and peace out.
I need to know that my voice is not screaming for help under a flooded society, that it is being heard, not just to be heard, but to be taken seriously. I need wealthy policymakers to stop putting my future up for profit. I need to know that the beautiful scenes I am privileged to witness can be admired by my grandchildren and future generations to come. I need them to stop, because we sure as hell won't. La naturaleza es belleza, entonces deja que se quede así. Because to protect her is to protect us. I just need a livable future. Is that too much to ask? Ask, ask, ask.
Let them know they can't throw us away, no. Let them know they can't throw us away, no. Let them know they can't throw us away, ay. No one is disposable. Let them know they can't throw us away, no. Let them know they can't throw us away, no. Let them know they can't throw us away, ay. No one is disposable.
COVID and climate change ain't far from the same. People in the margins disrespected and blamed. They put oil and gas infrastructures where we play. Contaminate the land, air and the rain. Our health in a game, our lungs are inflamed. Stuck in a cage with a severe corona case. Displaced by the climate while they profit from our pain. But I don't see them treating their children the same way. Hey, they try to bury me, but don't know I'm a seed. We are seeds existing, floating with no ID. No one is disposable. We are capable, rooted like a vegetable, and taking back the time to give it to my people. Want everything equal, no government's free throw. We know how to water the roots. Need no politician telling us how to do it. Need no politician telling us how to do it. need no politician telling us how to
let
do.
Them know they can't throw us away, no. Let them know they can't throw us away, no. Let them know they can't throw us away, ay. No one is disposable. Let them know they can't throw us away, no. Let them know they can't throw us away, no.
Oh, no.
Let them know they can't throw us away,
ay. Don't they know?
No one is disposable.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN, at it again. Simon, Adamant, Chris, Juwan, Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me, yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though.
Yeah.
Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bellevue. Yeah. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat it and any from the steel grave beats. They bleed. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say you peace to the lovers I named with a please. Made a some shade on your name in the street. Let's go.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Let's go.
Thank you.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland. Tune in to KBOO on Saturday, May 2nd from 7 to 10 p.m. for KBOO's Stay Home and Dance Party, where we can celebrate our community while maintaining the social distance.